The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
I got my bags packed on a roll. I'm heading out there and I'm ready to go. Looking real good in my passport photo.
Amateur Traveler, episode 361. Today, the Amateur Traveler travels to one of our most unusual destinations as we go to North Korea. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before we get into this week's interview, I do have three news stories for you. It must be good to be Larry Ellison, the billionaire who bought his own Hawaiian island, the island of Lanai, just recently bought his own airline to get there, Hawaii's Island Air. In the UK, an interesting development because objects on the street, like street lamps, may start telling you stories. There's a project called Hello Lamppost Project that is going to use the unique existing codes already on things like lamppost and tie that into databases of information for travelers. And so that you would scan with your phone a particular unique ID, and if there is a story about the neighborhood, then you would pull up that story on your mobile phone. A Scottish visitor to New Zealand had an unusual experience when he claims that all his holiday savings were stolen by a parrot. Apparently, the parrot got into his camper van and stole hundreds of dollars. For links to all three of those stories, check out the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I'd like to welcome to the show Matt from England, who's come to talk to us about North Korea. Matt, welcome to the show.
Chris, thanks.
Now, you have a blog post that you did, or a blog that you wrote about your trip to North Korea. You understand that some people really have no desire at all to go to North Korea. Why did you?
Yeah, that's a pretty good question. I understand that North Korea is probably not on people's list of places to visit in 2013, or any year, really, to be honest. And there is the moral question. If you do decide to travel there as a tourist, you will have to travel with a group sponsored by the government. And as such, all the money that you spend on your trip will end up in the hands of the North Korean government. And, well, perhaps that's not the greatest thing that you could choose to do with your money. But if you can get past that, the countryside itself is beautiful. Pyongyang is just an outrageous city, unlike any other city in the world. And you have the chance to really travel back in time 40-odd years and observe at first hand a psychological experiment which has been going on in North Korea on 24 million people. Now, that may be a little bit much for some people to take, but if you can get past that, I would really recommend going.
And despite the fact that the standard of living in North Korea is so low, we're talking about an expensive trip, and I'm going to guess that the accommodations and the service is actually pretty poor for the money you spend.
Actually, the accommodation is not too bad.
Okay.
When we were there, there was only one hotel open in Pyongyang, but it was a 4-star hotel, all accommodation facilities that you would expect from a 4-star hotel, enormous Western-style breakfast buffet, slightly surreally, every morning. And then there was also international television available in the room, so we could watch the BBC, we could watch CNN from our rooms. There was a rotating restaurant on the top floor of the hotel, and in the basement there was a massage area, karaoke. So not quite as shabby as you might imagine. You're quite right about the cost. We only were in North Korea for 5 days and 4 nights, and that cost us $1,500 US each. That includes the flight from Beijing into Pyongyang and then a 24-hour train journey from Pyongyang back to Beijing. So, of course, you have to get to Beijing as well. And it doesn't include entrance tickets to the Arirang Mass Participation Games, which is something that if you're in North Korea and it's on, then you really have to go because it's something not to be missed. I've also looked up to see the prices for a slightly longer trip, and an 11-day, 10-night trip at the moment will cost you almost $3,000 per person. That does include all your food and accommodation while you're there, but anything else that you want to buy, obviously you have to pay extra for. So it's not cheap.
And then what was your itinerary for the time that you were in North Korea?
There are a lot of monuments to see in and around Pyongyang, and if I was to list them all here, everybody would fall asleep. So you can assume that at least there would be two or three visits to monuments every day, often to the glory of Kim Jong-il or Kim Il-sung, the dear leader and the great leader respectively, or their ideas or something that they once thought about or some place that they once visited. So you get a lot of that. And then on the top of that, there are also extra events that you go to. So we went to a classical musical recital. We also went to a school where children sung and danced for us. We took a trip to a film studio, which I found a little bit boring, to be honest. We got to walk around and see that they had an area set up as China in the 1950s. They had an area set up as Europe today. They said had an area set up as North Korea in the 18th century. And to be honest, that wasn't why I was in North Korea. I was in North Korea to try and get a feeling of their psychology, how they think, why they act as they do, not so much to see their film studios. However, Kim Il-sung had been there once, and we were treated to a fabulous rendition of his opinions about how films should be edited and shot and acted in.
And just talking about the mechanics of film from his point of view?
Yeah, he has opinions, wise opinions, on everything.
On everything, okay.
Yes. So everywhere we went, he'd been and offered some opinion about how wonderful the workers had been or how it should have been done or, yeah, ridiculous things like that.
Hmm. And what was the highlight for you? You mentioned it wasn't the movie studio.
Definitely not the movie studio. Well, I've narrowed it down to three highlights, to be honest. There's the mausoleum where Kim Il-sung resides now. It was his home when he was alive, and it's now been turned into his final resting place. It's an enormous concrete palace where the windows have been concreted over. In front of it is a 500-meter-long square, completely empty, which sort of adds to the surreal nature of it. We were told that we had to dress smartly, so no shorts and no T-shirts, preferably shirt and tie, if you had that with you. So if you are going to North Korea, I can recommend taking a shirt and tie if you are a gentleman, and a smart dress if you're a lady. And as you enter, you have to hand over your camera and your bag and all your belongings. And then you're taken along over 2 kilometers of travelator and escalator.
Travelator is a moving sidewalk?
Yes, exactly. Okay. Which will take you into the palace building itself. And as you're going along the travelator and the escalators, the air sort of becomes more and more oppressive and you feel it sort of pressing in on you. It's a very somber occasion. There were many military people there, everyone really smartly dressed and very somber. And you're taken through into an area which depicts events in Kim Il-sung's life. You're given a small headset which takes you through the mourning of the people when he died, exactly how sad everyone was that he'd passed away. You're also taken through a rotating brush which cleans dirt and dust off your shoes. Mm. And through a blower which will blow dust off you before you finally come into the area where he lays in state. And it's dimly lit with a red light and surrounded by military guards all around. And you approach it in groups of four and you're told to bow at his feet and on his left side and at his right side before you file out again and then back out into the sunshine and into the square where somehow the oppressive nature of the visit is lifted. And that is certainly one of the most bizarre places I've ever been. And it's almost as if it's a deity lying there in state for the North Korean people. They're so reverential around him. It's really, really interesting.
And were there a lot of North Koreans there, not just tourists?
Yeah, there weren't very many tourists. We were the only group of tourists there. But yes, there were lines and lines of North Koreans, mostly military.
Okay.
Everybody immaculately dressed and turned out to the visit to Kim Il-sung. And there is some talk that Kim Jong-il is also going to lie in state there once they have him embalmed, I assume.
And you said you had three highlights?
Yeah, another one is a trip out of Pyongyang down to the DMZ, the demilitarized zone, which is the border between South Korea and North Korea. There's a 2-kilometer stretch either side of the border, which has been sectioned off and no one really visits that area. It's going to be a perfect nature reserve when things finally open up. It'll be very interesting to see what's developed there. But outside of that, actually at the border, you have facing each other two large concrete buildings, one on the South Korean side, one on the North Korean side, approximately 100 to 200 meters apart. And in the middle, there are small Nissan huts which lay across the border. So the border runs through the middle of the huts, and there are doors at either end. So you can come in from the North Korean side and come in from the South Korean side. And then there's a table exactly in the center so that two sides can sit opposite each other and discuss whatever they have to discuss. One of the great things about it was that we visited it from the north side first and were given the spiel about how the north wanted to liberate the south and reunify the country, and were really going for that. And there was a surprising lack of anti-capitalist and anti-American propaganda from them, which I thought was interesting. And then after we'd finished our time in North Korea, we went back to Beijing and flew directly to South Korea and took the same trip from the other side 5 days later. And it was very, very surreal to be standing in exactly the same room, knowing that if we walked through the door that we walked through 5 days earlier, we would definitely be shot from both sides. And the trip from the South Korean side was actually run by the American military, who run things on that side. And their propaganda was slightly more offensive. They called the North Koreans monkeys and spoke down about them. And it was actually interesting. I would have expected before I left that it would have been the other way around. But in fact, the North are all about liberating the South. The North feel as if they're the big brother and feel sorry for the South living as they do in the horrible capitalist world, and feel like one day they'll be able to liberate the South. But they really have no comprehension that the South probably has absolutely no interest in living as the people do in the North. So that was definitely a highlight. And I would recommend, if it's possible for visitors, to visit from the North and then visit again from the South a few days later. It's an amazing experience. Very, very surreal.
Hmm. Now, I've read recently about how life can be very difficult in the North, especially if you're just sort of a typical person. And some very odd things, like most of the men work for the government and most of the women are not allowed to. And because they make so little money working for the government, if a man were to divorce his wife, he might literally starve. Did you get any sense of that at all? I'm assuming on a government trip, you're seeing more Potemkin villages, was what I would expect. You're not getting a chance to see any of that.
Yeah, exactly. But also because we were really confined to Pyongyang, and Pyongyang is the showcase of North Korea. You are selected to live in Pyongyang. You don't get any choice about living there. So only the best people get to live in Pyongyang. You don't see any old people walking the streets in Pyongyang. You certainly don't see any disabled people or anyone who looks sort of out of place or shabby. Everybody there looks like a good, strong worker. But because we were only in Pyongyang, we really didn't get to see much of the countryside. The only time we really did was when we took the train from Pyongyang to Beijing. And then it's through the countryside. So it's a lot of rural scenes, people fixing tractors in fields, cycling along the side of the track on bikes. So to be honest, when you go on a trip to North Korea, you see what they want you to see. You don't get a choice about what you want to see. And of course, they're only going to show what's in a good light. So you really have absolutely no clue what the regular man on the street is thinking or how their life is.
And you said you had a third highlight.
Yes, the Arirang Mass Participation Games, which defies description, to be honest. It's held in one of the largest sports stadiums in the world. The North Koreans say that there are 150,000 seats in the stadium. And for the mass participation games, there are 100,000 people participating from the North Korean side. I didn't count them all, so I can only take their word for it. What happens is you sit on one of the long sides of the stadium, and directly opposite you, on the other long side, there are 30,000 school children with large cardboard books. Each book has a different colour on a different page, and they follow instructions from people at the front of their section and produce a moving picture of 30,000 small pieces directly across from you, which is a stunning sight. If there is one good thing to be said about the North Korean regime, they can get their children to do anything. The area where the football pitch or whatever pitch it would be is then covered with people doing gymnastics or synchronized dance, and it takes you through the story of Korea. It's a stunning artistic display and a perfect example of the group over the individual. Of course, it requires absolute dedication and discipline for every single performer, but you never see one single performer because everybody moves in perfect harmony, which it is stunning. It, again, it's not cheap. It costs €80 for a ticket for that, but it's worth every single cent. If I would go back, then I would make sure to go back when the mass participation games are being held, because it's worth seeing. And they are on from August to September every year.
What time of year were you there?
We were there in September, start of September.
Okay. My understanding is the wintertime would be probably a very poor time to be there, very cold. I don't know how hot it gets in the summertime.
Yeah, it gets hot, but they only run trips from the middle of February to the end of November.
Okay.
There are no trips in the winter. I think it would just be too cold to be outside. And each of the trips, there's going to be a highlight. So, for example, the one that runs at the start of February, there's a flower festival showcasing the orchids Kim Jong-ilia and Kim Il-sungia. I know you can make it up. Fortunately, you don't have to. The North Koreans have already made it up for us. But various different things happen at various different times of year. There'll be a celebration of the birth of North Korea, so there'll be a large military parade through Pyongyang. Or if you go in August and September, then you have the mass games to go and watch.
Interesting. I'm going to guess that there were some surprises traveling to a country that's so isolated politically right now.
Yes and no.
Interesting. Okay.
Before you go, you're given a fairly thorough briefing in Beijing the night before you leave from the tour company, where they try and highlight any things that may surprise you while you're there. One thing that you don't want to do is create a protest or say something out of turn. So there are great pains before you go to make sure that you know exactly what you should and shouldn't be doing. For example, there's a golden statue of Kim Il-sung in the center of Pyongyang, an enormous golden statue. And if you take a picture of it, you have to take a picture of the entire statue. You're not allowed to take a picture of a piece of the statue. And when you leave North Korea, there are border guards who will check through everybody's photos. And if they see one where there's a piece of Kim Il-sung, golden statue, taken a picture of, then they will delete it and possibly delete all the pictures that you've taken. There was one girl who was in our group who had all her pictures deleted when we crossed the border from North Korea into China. So that sucked. So I would recommend, if you are going to go, try and back up your pictures in as many ways as you possibly can. And if you're two people, then take two cameras, maybe even three cameras. That would be my recommendation. One of the things that was a surprise was how friendly our guides became. We were a group of 20 people, so we had three guides with us at all times when we were outside. And to start with, they were fairly austere and severe. It seemed like they were there to guard us and not really to become friends with us. But as the trip developed, they became much more friendly and ended up drinking and having karaoke competitions in the bar in the hotel on the last couple of nights. that we were there. And after we came home, we thought about it and we wondered if maybe it was a ploy on their behalf to make sure that we didn't step out of line while we were there. Because if you do step out of line as a tourist, it'll be your guide who suffers.
That's interesting. That seems like an incredible amount of pressure on them.
That is an incredible amount of pressure. In fact, one of our guides came out in an attack of hives while we were there, perhaps because of the stress of having 20 of us following him around everywhere.
Interesting. One warning you would give, besides don't take a picture of just part of the statue.
Sure. It's probably fairly important that you don't take any Western literature, especially guidebooks to Korea, into the country, because they'll be taken away from you when you enter the country, and you may well be deported as well. They don't want any outside influence in coming into their country. In fact, when we arrived, all mobile phones were handed over to the guides and put in a plastic bag and taped up, and then only given back to us when we crossed back into China. So no access to the internet and no access to mobile phones. However, I have just read that you are now allowed to take a mobile phone with you into North Korea, but you can't receive or make a telephone call unless you have a North Korean SIM card, which are not available. So I guess it's just a nod to the fact that many people use their mobile phones as cameras these days.
Yeah, that's what the first thing I thought of when you were saying that.
So, but when we went, all mobile phones were put in a plastic bag and taped up.
You're standing in the prettiest spot of everything you saw in North Korea. Where are you standing and what are you looking at?
Well, for us, because we were in Pyongyang so much, I would say that the prettiest thing would be the mass participation games. Synchronicity of the movement of those 30,000 children sitting in the seats opposite us and the X thousand performers on the pitch in front of us is just stunning, to be honest.
And I'm curious to the answer to this one. When did you feel closest to home, most familiar, and when did you feel furthest from home?
I would say closest to home would be when we got back after a day of monument seeing and were able to sit in our hotel room, me and my wife, and talk about the crazy things we'd seen and the crazy things we'd been told every day. You just don't feel at home in North Korea. I've traveled to many strange foreign countries, and there's always something that makes you feel a little bit like you're at home. But in North Korea, not a chance. Everything is completely foreign. So I would say that little bit of home, our hotel room, was the closest to home we felt.
And furthest from home, strangest experience?
Strangest experience, I would say just driving through Pyongyang. There are no private cars on the roads, so the only cars are military vehicles, and there are very few of those. And yet, at the side of the road, people are given a section of the road to keep clean. So they sit there and they brush the road religiously every day, absolutely pristinely clean. All the way from Pyongyang, the 100, 120 kilometers down to the border, the road is completely empty, three-lane highway on each side, and completely pristinely clean with no vehicles driving on it. It's actually one of the dangers of driving is that because there are so few vehicles, pedestrians tend to just wander out into the road without looking. So our driver was constantly leaning on the horn to warn pedestrians of our imminent arrival.
You talked about being in the hotel room and talking about the crazy things that they told you.
I would say that most of that is just about the cult around Kim Il-sung and how much they're invested in it, how much they believe in it, and how they feel a little bit sorry for us as Westerners that we don't get to live in North Korea and we don't get to worship Kim Il-sung as they worship him and his memory. And it's a little bit as if somebody was a missionary trying to convert an atheist. The more they preach at you, the more ridiculous it sounds and the less likely I am to convert, as it were, to the North Korean way of thinking. So it was everywhere you go, there are murals painted of Kim Jong-il and Kim Il-sung doing things, looking after children, showing people how to make the railways, all sorts of crazy things like that. And it was just a constant banging on about how great Kim Il-sung and how great Kim Jong-il and how great the system that they have in North Korea is, where to our eyes it's patently obvious that that's not the case.
One thing that makes you laugh and say only in North Korea.
Only in North Korea would Kim Il-sung be everywhere. And he is everywhere. Any building you go into, there is a small picture of Kim Il-sung or Kim Jong-il. Even we took a trip on the Pyongyang metro, I think, from Revitalization Station to Glory Station. And in every carriage, there's a picture of Kim Jong-il and Kim Il-sung. Also, if you live in Pyongyang, the first thing you have to do when you move into your apartment is to put up a picture of Kim Il-sung and Kim Jong-il. There are people who live in the apartment blocks whose job it is to go into other people's apartments and check that the pictures of Kim Il-sung and Kim Jong-il have been dusted and are clean and are hanging straight on the walls. That's just crazy.
Huh. Interesting. Before we wrap up, we're coming to the end here. What else should people know before they go to North Korea?
People should know that it's tough. Mentally, it's tough. You get tired. Even though you're just sitting in a bus being transported from one monument to another monument, it's tough. It's really hard work to hear these things all the time. You don't get much chance to get out and walk around. We got to visit the USS Pueblo, which is a Navy intelligence, American Navy intelligence ship captured by the North Koreans in 1968. And that was really the only chance that we got to do a little bit of walking about. You get to walk around in some of the museums that you go to. We went to the Victorious Fatherland Liberation War Museum, which is... exactly.
We're not going for subtle here, are we? Okay.
We're not, no. Which is packed full of captured US and South Korean weapons, tanks, planes, guns from the war. And you get to walk around there. But it's tough work. You get back to your hotel and you're pretty beat at the end of a day of monumental sightseeing.
Last two questions. You really know you're in North Korea when what?
When Kim Il-sung tells you what to wear. He's everywhere, giving you advice all the time.
And when you say tells you what to wear?
If Kim Il-sung were still alive, he would appear in your hotel room every day and instruct you about the best thing to wear. He would be there instructing you on how you should eat your rice and chicken at the dinner table. He would be there instructing you on how to go to the bathroom. Kim Il-sung is the all-knowing genius. So you know you're in North Korea when Kim Il-sung tells you what to do.
And if you had to summarize North Korea in three words, what three words would you use?
I would pick monumental, okay, blinkered, and Kim.
And what was your second word was what?
Blinkered. As if when a horse is running and it has blinkers on so it can see forwards, but it only sees what the person who's controlling it wants it to see.
For us, those would be blinders.
Blinders, right. In the UK, we call them blinkers.
Okay. That for us is the thing on the car that tells you which direction you're turning. Okay, got it.
Okay, that's an indicator where I come from. And my final word would be Kim, because Kim is everywhere.
Interesting. Matt, thank you so much for coming on the Amateur Traveler. This has been a fascinating peek into a country that most people haven't had a chance to look into.
Thanks for giving me the opportunity, Chris.
After we stopped recording, Matt did say that one thing that he would recommend is before you go to North Korea, watch the documentary A State of Mind, which is about both the country and about someone getting prepared for the mass participation games. Andy left a comment on Travel to London, Part 2, Episode 359. It was great to hear the second episode in the city I called home for nearly a decade. I realized that packing just three London museums in is a thankless task, and whilst Amber's selections were all worthy, I begged to add one more. Whereas those museums have a national focus, the Museum of London is probably the best way to understand the city itself. It now has two branches, the original in the city, and the newer Museum of London Docklands near Canary Wharf in Docklands. Both have a great mix of immense and show cabinet style content, and were amongst the highlights of our most recent visit in summer of 2010. Indeed, we returned to the Docklands branch for a second visit, as there was far more than we had expected.
One other market-related suggestion would be Brick Lane, just east of the City of London. The nearby Petticoat Lane market is a bit disappointing, consisting largely of cheap clothing you could find in bargain stores, but Brick Lane has an amazing variety along its length, from bric-a-brac to craft to food. You also experience the large Indian influence in the area, as well as remnants of Jewish life in earlier eras. Throw in some world-class street art, including Banksy, and you've got a great way to spend a Sunday morning. Andy, thanks for the comment. I also enjoyed the Museum of London, although I have not seen the new branch in the Docklands, so that was good to know. And thanks for the market suggestion. In terms of street art, there's actually an article that went up recently on the Amateur Traveler about street art in London. So if you're a street art fan, go check that out on the blog. If you're in the Austin, Texas area, I'll be getting down there just briefly around the time of South by Southwest, the conference. And it sounds like Nomadic Matt, who's been a guest on this show, may be doing a meetup sometime while I am down there. So stay tuned at the facebook.com/amateur traveler Facebook page for more details about that. With that, we're going to end this episode of the Amateur Traveler. You can join the community on Facebook, as I mentioned. You can also follow me on Twitter at Chris2X. You can send comments to me at host@amateurtraveler.com. Or if you have a comment on this episode, just leave it on the website at amateurtraveler.com. And as always, thanks so much for listening.